Elgin Talks is produced by Legal & General Investment Management, providing you with the investment ideas we just can't stop talking about. This podcast assumes a certain level of knowledge of financial markets and is intended for investment professionals. From Legal & General Investment Management, I'm Mark Chappell. This is Elgin Talks. From food to clothes to the headphones you may be using right now, UK shoppers are making more than 80% of their purchases online. E-commerce is the business of delivering what's in your online basket to your front door, and it's a sector that's significantly growing. Our guests today join us from Transport Intelligence, a leading provider of market research solutions to the global logistics industry. David Buckby, their resident economist, and Nick Bailey, their head of research. Nick, Dave, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Dave, if I could start with you. How would you quantify the growth in e-commerce? I mean, where are you seeing dramatic changes in customers' behavior from offline to online?
So to start with, to put some numbers on it, I think globally we're seeing e-commerce growth of approximately 20%. Now, that obviously varies by region quite substantially. So, for instance, in advanced economies, so Western Europe and North America, for example, as a floor, you'll see growth rates maybe in the high single digits, getting up to 10%. But then more typically, it's around 5 to 15% mark. In emerging markets, these are more nascent markets, so you see higher growth rates, so 20% or higher, or even getting up to 30%. And it's certainly the higher growth rates in the markets where you're getting a lot of customers rapidly switching from offline retail to online retail. And that's happening fastest, like I said, in the emerging markets with big populations, places like India and Indonesia, where internet penetration is increasing very rapidly.
Interesting. And Nick, I'd like to dig a little, why is that?
I think it's kind of driven by the fact that people want convenience when they shop. So to think about the process that we would have gone through to buy headphones, like you said, you have to maybe go into a shop, ask a person what's good, what's their opinion on these things, and you don't necessarily know who they are, what they're saying about them, other than they happen to work in that store. Whereas online, you have firstly the vast information around all the products that you want, and then also it's just really, really simple to click a couple of buttons, and then decide, I will get this in a way which fits in with my life. Maybe I'll get it delivered to work, maybe it's Saturday, I'll be at home. So that convenience is really, really important for consumers, and that's really, really what e-commerce logistics providers are trying to facilitate. They're trying to offer that to retailers so the retailers can offer their consumers really great experiences, and they're trying to offer that to consumers as well, so that reinforces the cycle.
Interesting. And so how would you exactly define e-commerce logistics in it separately from e-commerce?
So e-commerce, like we said, is just basically online retail sales, but e-commerce logistics really has two distinct segments, and those are fulfillment. That's really everything that goes on in the warehouse, and also the last mile side of things. And that is your UPSs or your FedEx or your Royal Mails delivering the parcels. And just to elaborate a bit more on what fulfillment actually is in the warehouse. So that's receiving and inspecting inventories, that's picking your inventories, packaging up your inventories. But it's worth saying as well that fulfillment does not just stop there. It's not just the warehouse. It can be other activities such as managing online payments or handling customer inquiries, that sort of thing. So it's not just about what goes in the warehouse. It is a bit broader than that. That's the basics of e-commerce logistics, really.
So that's really interesting, because I guess when I order something online, and I think most of the people, we wouldn't really ever think about who's actually doing that, delivering from the shop that I bought it from to my front door, and whether that's all the same company or a combination that fulfills or delivers at that last mile, as you were saying, Nick. So would you say that for investors, would you see better growth prospects for the people who are doing a lot more on the fulfillment side, or perhaps more on the last mile side, or is it more of companies who are just going to become really good at doing both?
Sure. So that's a very, very interesting question. And what we see from looking at online retailers and their division of fulfillment and last mile costs is that that is approximately a 50-50 split. And over the last 5 years, what you've seen is that that split hasn't changed very much. It's not clearly going up. it's not clearly going down. And what that means is that the fulfillment market is growing at approximately the same rate as the last mile market. And that's really the best assumption you can make.
And I think it's important as well to kind of try and classify what's going on in both of those elements. So as Dave says, when you're talking about fulfillment, you're really talking about stuff that goes on inside a warehouse. And you may be extending that as close to the purchase point on the retailer's website as possible. And to an extent, you're also extending it all the way to the start of the last mile network. Within that, though, as Dave mentions, there's lots of things which go on. So there's picking and packing, and you can do those with people, you can do them with robots, and you can do them somewhat efficiently both ways, but robots generally are the most quicker way to get it done, and often the more cost efficient as well. Also within fulfillment, you're maybe talking about some value add activity. So logistics providers potentially offer things like gift wrapping. It's certainly around Christmas time, that's something which happens quite often. It's an added skill set which goes on, and it gets to the point that within fulfillment, you're trying to create value for the retailer. So that's what's going on there. Versus the last mile, it's a different set of challenges and a different set of reactions that we're seeing. So if we think back kind of to the origin of Express, so the last mile element to an extent, that really kind of formed and found a lot of good opportunities in B2B deliveries. So that's when you have a business order something from another business. Mm-hmm. It turns up at that orderer's business. And you can do certain things like know they're going to be there, know you're going to get delivered first time. You also have things like the option to specify a time of day when it will show up, so you're adding a bit of value. And often you get to do it first time for a company which is willing to pay a bit more because they need it to keep operating. Switch that around to what's going on in B2C delivery with e-commerce, and really what you have is lots of consumers wanting lots of different things, but with much less predictability about where they're going to be. So like I said earlier on, maybe you choose to get it delivered to your office, maybe you choose to get it delivered to your house because it's Saturday, but if you don't know when it's going to show up on Saturday, are you going to stay in all day? Like, that's something which we kind of were used to as consumers, but we also kind of didn't like as consumers. So you see a lot of last mile providers beginning to specify times of day when stuff will show up. So that's the kind of way that they're beginning to add value in reaction to what's going on. But in the last mile, it's really hard to make money because the unit revenue for each delivery is low because, let's be honest, consumers don't really want to pay for it. So there's not a huge amount of scope to make money off of it. So doing it as efficiently as possible, using things like prediction windows, so telling people within 30 minutes when their parcel will show up, but then also delivering to something like lockers and tube stations and things like that.
I was just about to mention kind of lockers. I mean, it does feel like in this conversation that Amazon is really the elephant in the room, because all of the things you mentioned just then are very much things that Amazon have brought in the recent years. I mean, it's whether it's automation in their warehouses, but it's definitely the kind of Amazon lockers. It's telling you, offering you choice of when and where as well. Of course, they've offered for years. I mean, is that the future, Amazon lockers and this kind of variety in B2C delivery?
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. There's a huge variety in alternative delivery networks. So because the B2C players and the online retailers have realized that, you know, delivering to people's houses is just too unreliable and therefore too expensive, so they need to find a way to make it much cheaper. Probably the best way they can do that is click and collect at a store, because that can just be put on a truck, just goes from the warehouse direct to the store. So it's probably the best way and the cheapest way of doing it for them. But like you say, there's parcel lockers, there's parcel shops, there's all sorts of other options as well. And you're right, the consumer does really want the various choices available.
Would click and collect be beneficial for retail growth? I mean, if you've got the customer actually coming back into the physical store, having purchased something online, is that beneficial to retail sales?
Yeah, I would certainly say that there are lots of ways in which you can measure the effect of e-commerce buyers coming into your physical stores. So, for example, John Lewis is a really great example of this. They record increased footfall in their Waitrose stores, where they often offer the ability to pick up your John Lewis package. And more than that, it also creates other opportunities as well. So you're right, if you go into Waitrose because you've ordered some headphones from John Lewis, maybe also you pick up your lunch at the same time. Maybe also you pick up something which only Waitrose has, and then you become a customer of Waitrose. So there's lots of knock-on effects. Whether you can directly say they are because of these e-commerce deliveries outside of like really the kind of direct measures like footfall and things like that is a little bit more diffuse, but I cannot believe really that any retailer who is driving people into its stores in any way possible is hating that.
So I'd like to go back to something you mentioned a bit earlier about robots being the more efficient warehouse workers. So how best are we going to see this sort of technology being deployed in this space?
That's a very good question. I think it's just interesting just to put some numbers around that, just so to get an idea of why the companies are really investing in these robots. And that's because e-commerce logistics can be a very expensive activity. So for pure play online retailers, logistics costs can be up to 20% of their sales. Compare that to a conventional retailer, 10% or less. So it's really, really expensive. And it's really expensive because one huge element of cost is labor, because labor can be, you need 2 to 5 times more labor for an e-commerce fulfillment operation than you do for a conventional retail operation. So that's really the imperative that's driving investment in these robots.
Sure, and it's important when you talk about robots in kind of warehouses to really point out that it's part of much wider automation set of technologies, and that includes things like conveyor belts, and they're old hat to a certain extent at this point. But we're seeing a lot of different types of robots being developed. One is Amazon's Kiva Systems. So that was an acquisition they made quite a few years ago. It didn't really start taking off to around 2012, I think. But there was some research from Deutsche Bank which came out, and their analysis pointed towards the fact that it created, I think, a 20% reduction in operating costs by having these systems versus the old way with people and being labor intensive. It also allowed them to store 50% more items in inventory in the same warehouses where they were deployed. And ultimately, if you scale that up across Amazon's entire network, which at this point is huge, the potential for savings, the potential for efficiency gains in terms of speed to dispatch, and also in terms of things like just the sheer volume of goods near to the consumers in the warehouses, it's really important. So Kiva Systems, another great thing that it did for Amazon was to take the average cycle time, which is from when we press click on buy, to the time that that item is ready for dispatch, from 75 minutes to just 15.
Wow.
So if you can increase your cycle time to that extent, you can begin to do two things. Firstly, get stuff to people really quick, and secondly, allow them to order later and later in the day. So after people have come home from work or whatever they've done after that, maybe up to 10 p.m. instead of just 8 p.m. instead of just 6 p.m.
So yeah, it used to be 2 p.m., I think, for
same
day delivery or next day delivery. I mean, this has really kind of got later in the day as technology has improved.
Yeah, exactly. And someone like Next has been very good at pushing that back to 10 p.m. And other high street retailers, Marks & Spencer's, Debenhams, have had to follow, because if you really need something and you need it the next day, you have to go to where it's available. If it's 8 p.m. and it's only Next because all the stores are shut and then you can't get it from M&S, you only got so many options. So that's a really important kind of reason for having these kind of automated systems in place. And it's not just necessarily the Amazons of the world that are doing this. So there's an example of Houston Logistics, which is a kind of a global 3PL, we would call it. So in a facility in Singapore, they installed a system from a company called Swisslog. So it's a third-party provider of these automated systems. And essentially, it's a grid which sits over the top of your inventory, and automated kind of pickers come along, grab the box, bring it to somebody who then takes the item. They take the box back. By introducing that system, they were able to store nearly twice as much inventory in the same space. They were also able to increase their throughput by 18 times from that one facility in Singapore. So it is companies like Amazon. They're investing heavily and they're getting much better at it. But it's also traditional 3PLs. They're not being left behind here. They're very aware of the challenges that they face.
Of course. I mean, is that kind of a large part of the future for the growth of e-commerce logistics, in that the companies who are doing it really, really well, in the, you know, it's the JD.com logistics, the Ocados, where we've just seen they've had that partnership announced with Kroger, the second largest retailer in food retailer in the US, where you become really, really good at warehouse automation, and then you can sell that technology or that, you know, capability elsewhere. And is that a significant new revenue stream for these companies?
Absolutely. So it's, you know, technology over time has become an increasingly important competitive differentiator, and we've really seen that with Ocado, like you said. So they've transformed from being an online grocery retail company really to a provider of logistics technology services that they are now providing all over the world. So I think they're in the UK providing it to M&S. They're in various places in Europe, in Sweden, in France, I believe, as well. And yeah, most recently, like you say, they've gone over to North America. They firstly went to a Canadian grocery retailer called Sobeys, and now their really big break was, like you say, Kroger. And yeah, now it's just an enormous potential revenue stream for Ocado. They've really positioned themselves at the forefront of logistics technology in the online grocery world.
Sure. And I think, I mean, I absolutely agree with everything Dave said there. And I think one important thing to kind of point out here is not to necessarily be so kind of developed market centric in what we talk about here. So part of the reason that there's this drive towards automation, especially in either developed markets, so Kroger employing Ocado in the States, for example, but also as we've been talking about some of the other Kiva Systems robots that are around and things like that. That's really because labor is incredibly intensive and expensive when it comes to e-fulfillment. That's not necessarily the case in some emerging markets. So there needs to be this decision for either the retailer, if they're doing it like an Amazon JD.com type way, or for the logistics provider, if they're trying to essentially just create a profitable e-fulfillment system for themselves, or for kind of anyone within this kind of decision-making kind of group at this point, to work out, is our investment in either developing or installing these systems in this facility, in this location in the world, the best investment over something like labor costs? Because there are still places in the world where labor is plentiful, cheap, and available. So that still, in some cases, is the best option to go for.
Yeah, just to put some sort of more hard numbers on that, what we've seen from our research is that logistics costs as a proportion of sales for online retailers in developed markets, it depends exactly what they do, but it's typically between 15 to 20%. And if you look at the corresponding type of retailers in emerging markets, places like India and China, where labor costs are considerably lower, what you see is logistics costs as a proportion of sales are below 10%, perhaps even 8%. So it's about half. So that just gives an idea of the cost advantage that labor is providing. What's interesting is that in China, some of the world leaders in automated warehouse technologies are the online retail giants Alibaba and JD. So JD, for example, just opened a warehouse very recently, which I think can process 200,000 items a day, and it has 4 employees.
Wow.
And those are employees to look after the robots.
Yeah.
not to do anything kind of fulfillment-y.
So service technicians.
Do. Exactly.
Sort of thing. I mean, this is kind of amazing advances in, I don't think many people would kind of associate like so many orders with so few actual human beings. Uh-huh. I mean, it's something you'd only really see in sci-fi films or in that sort of area. I mean, that we've talked a lot about now technology in the fulfillment areas. What will be the technology advances in the last mile areas? Are we looking at driverless cars? I mean, you could hardly go a week without seeing Amazon investing in drone technology and the idea of flying drones. But how close are we to more advances in that area?
So drones are an interesting one. I don't expect them to see them being used widespread in areas like cities. They're much more useful potentially in sort of rural deliveries and things like that, hard to get to places. But it's worth saying as well, actually, that drones are not just confined to the last mile. They also can be useful in warehouses to do things like stock counting and things like that. So, yeah, they don't just have necessary last mile uses.
Yeah, in something like autonomous vehicles, that has a huge potential to fit into this flow in what we've talked about, which is to remove a costly labor element, or ideally to free that labor element up to do something more value adding. So when it comes to something like autonomous cars, you can take the driver out, and that driver or that kind of employment opportunity goes to someone to do something more value adding. But Google, for example, they have the designs for an autonomous van which drives around a city, has lockers on the back, it will let you know when it's outside your office building. You go to the locker and you open it up with your smartphone. It drives around suburbs. It lets you know when it's outside. So those are still a long way off. There's still a huge amount of challenges to solve in autonomous vehicles generally, and then specifically as well for kind of last mile delivery elements. But there's a lot of challenges in the last mile. They have to be overcome. Technology, again, is a great way to kind of get towards those solutions.
To take this back a second, I mean, we've talked a lot about e-commerce logistics. I mean, what makes this sector so different from logistics in other sectors? What makes e-commerce so special?
Sure. So I think you can look at that through, if we look at both parts of e-commerce logistics, so the warehousing and fulfillment side and then the last mile side. So on the warehousing side, e-commerce is all about picking individual items in the warehouse, whereas, say, in a conventional retail operation for a bricks and mortar retailer, it's all about handling pallets in the warehouse, so much more goods at once. Basically, it's much more efficient, much cheaper. On the last mile side of things, again, it's very different. So for a conventional retailer, again, it's palletized distribution in trucks, so it's pretty efficient. Contrast that to e-commerce, whereby it's deliveries of lots of individual items in vans to lots of different locations, lots of different houses, for example. So again, it's much more expensive.
In logistics service providers, and generally the larger ones, they probably see parallels between certain kind of sectors they work in. So whether that be something like automotive, where you have to have a lot of spare parts and they have to be very quickly available for when they're needed. So they have these facilities called forward stock locations. Mm-hmm. And those will have kind of created lessons over time on how to have a lot of stock in one place, have really good visibility on what you have and where it is in that location, and how to dispatch it and get it to where it's going very quickly. So logistics service providers are being challenged, and that's one of the reasons why there's so much kind of opportunity and challenge and problem solving going on in e-commerce logistics, because as Dave says, it's a really, really different operation to get something that we've ordered online to versus something to a store. So that's that kind of difference and that switch over, the pace at which that is required and the scale at which that is growing, is what creates lots of the opportunities here. But logistics service providers generally are quite well placed potentially to look at other areas of their business, other clients they have, other requirements that they service, and that's kind of allowed them to catch up a little bit in terms of what's going on. But there's still this massive growth, this massive change, this massive need to get better at e-fulfillment.
Looking at from e-commerce from an investment perspective, would you say that this is a long-term investment opportunity for prospective investors, or is it very much a short-term growth opportunity?
So our figures would suggest that for the e-commerce logistics market, that we think over the next 5 years, it will grow at approximately, on average, 15% per year. And we expect growth to gradually slow down over time as online retail sales growth slows. You don't get as much structural impetus from drivers such as growing internet penetration. You know, that steam runs out eventually. But yes, it's still going to be much higher growth compared to lots of other sectors, lots of other logistics sectors. So yeah, I certainly would see e-commerce as a strong long-term play.
I think there are both opportunities, actually. So someone who invested, let's say, over the short term being 2 years in a company like Alibaba, they would probably be quite happy with their returns on that. And that's because there are certain companies, be it retailers who are involved in logistics themselves or logistics providers who are able to kind of be a part of this growth, who are achieving good results very quickly. Over the long term, though, that's probably where the opportunity really is. As we say, there's a huge amount of change, a huge amount of need to kind of continue to innovate and iterate to get better at this. And like Dave says, online retail sales aren't going away. Like, this isn't a fad. This is a proper long-term trend now. But like all things, its rapid growth kind of will kind of mature. It will become more kind of lower growth figures year on year. But that doesn't mean that the opportunities disappear with the disappearance of those really high growth figures. Mm-hmm. There's still a massive focus on creating value for your retailer and value for their consumer. So even if we see a fall from the 20% growth figures that we see down to 2%, getting better within that 2% growth to make sure that of that 2%, your retail client is getting the best of it, you're still going to need to create more and more value over time.
So we've talked a lot about the growth opportunity. What would be the key investment risks that you see for this particular sector? I mean, there's been a lot of political developments. I mean, obviously, Brexit poses a transport issue for them. What else would you see?
So the key risks, I think, for logistics providers in particular, we mentioned labour costs earlier. So labour costs increasing is potentially a big issue. Another massive issue is technology. Again, we mentioned that before. So it's quite possible that if certain players, so we use the Ocado example, really get ahead and position themselves as real leaders in certain technologies, then it's possible that they might dominate a sector. For conventional logistics providers, I think there's threats, from the likes of Ocado, for instance. Ocado is not a conventional logistics provider, but also the online retailers themselves. I mean, look at how big Amazon, JD and Alibaba are getting and providing fulfillment services themselves. JD and Alibaba are looking to invest in Europe. So again, it's potentially a threat there to your conventional logistics providers, such as the big guys like DHL Supply Chain, XPO, that type of thing, that they could potentially challenge for their type of business as well.
I think as well there's a risk factor in just how difficult this is to do at scale well and consistently. So as we've kind of mentioned, it's a really big thing for these retailers to hand over control of a really key customer relationship that they have. So when we buy something online, our touch point with the retailer is how well and how quickly that product gets to us, how well the communication is kind of affected. Are we given a day when it arrives, an hour when it arrives, or a really small window, that type of thing? And it doesn't take a huge amount of disruption to a good system for it to start going wrong and for that to affect that company's reputation and to affect decision-making in retailers to, yes, we'll outsource, but not to them. So that type of thing. And that's maybe a good example of that. For example, is the videos online of couriers and people just throwing boxes over gates and onto roofs and stuff like that. If you can tie that to a specific delivery partner and they're your delivery partner, that's tough questions for the leadership of that logistics company. So that's a risk. Not delivering, essentially, is part of it. But then also just the pace of change. It's really, really simple to think that you've cracked this or cracked one area of it, and then for that area to change really, really quickly. In 18 months' time, your systems are inappropriate. So one thing that we see, for example, is a real drive in developed markets especially, so the UK and the States is a big one for this, of logistics providers wanting fulfillment centres and last mile depots really close to the people that are buying these products. So that's on the edges of New York, on the edges of London, places like that. But it's hard to, firstly, not everyone predicted that change. Secondly, it's not one that you necessarily see coming, even though in retrospect it seems really obvious. And investing in that depot, in that facility, is not necessarily a short-term decision. It's 3 to 5 years generally. And in 3 to 5 years, that trend can really take off and you can be left with some legacy infrastructure, which is creating hours, potentially days, more time in the delivery process. So that type of risk and not seeing the pace of change and kind of being on top of it is another risk.
Yeah, I think related to that is the issue of long-term profitability in the last mile sector. It's very, very difficult to be consistently profitable in the last mile sector. We've seen in Deutsche Post DHL Group, their post e-commerce parcel division, recently they announced that they expected lower profits to 2020 because they'd have to invest more in their parcel infrastructure in Germany. So they've really revised down. They've sort of they've really almost underestimated how difficult it was going to be. And I think this is not a unique thing. It happens in for lots of other companies as well. So yeah, like I say, it's last mile profitability is a bit of a risk as well.
Does that take us back around then to perhaps companies like DHL choosing to Post choosing to outsource rather than build it themselves, if they've already been burnt before and realized actually this was a lot more difficult than we'd ever planned, isn't it easier to just outsource to a proven successor?
Sure. So I think for online, well, for any company, whether you're a retailer, manufacturer, or an online retailer, that's always a massively important decision. Do you run your logistics in-house or do you outsource it? And in the e-commerce world, I think maybe 5-10 years ago, there's some skepticism among retailers about how effectively logistics providers could deliver all that they need in their logistics operation. So maybe there's a bit of a lack of trust there. Some were a bit reluctant to outsource. I think more recently, a lot of logistics providers have upped their game. So even some of the big LSPs were a bit slow to really get into e-commerce logistics, but now they're really all driving into it. And I think that's building trust with the retailers. And I think for that reason, I think e-commerce logistics outsourcing rates probably are on the increase. But yeah, like I say, it's a very difficult world. Like we've been saying, it's constantly changing. So yeah, it's very difficult for logistics providers.
A lot of optimism, but a lot of investment risks then.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that note, we're going to wrap up this episode of Elgium Talks. My thanks to David Buckby and Nick Bailey for joining us today from Transport Intelligence. My name is Mark Chappell. To find out more about our latest thoughts on markets and the long-term themes changing our world, visit the Elgium website at lgim.com or our new blog, futureworldblog.lgim.com. You can, of course, tweet at us with questions or comments on Twitter or find us on LinkedIn. Thanks again for listening, and be sure to subscribe to Elgium Talks through iTunes or wherever you download your podcasts. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.